In James chapter 5 and the latter part of verse 16, we take our text for our study this morning. It is brief and to the point, and James says, "The supplication of a righteous man availeth much in its working." And there he puts a period. Now, we could study this statement from various viewpoints. There would be some people that would say, "Are you sure that the supplication of a righteous man availeth much? Does prayer really work today?" We could study it from that viewpoint, but we're not. We're going to study it from the viewpoint in which James is presenting it to us. And as we have said so many times, the book of James is the book of common sense. It is the book that tells us how to live 365 days out of the year. James takes those things in which we are weak, those things in which we need to be strengthened, and he presents them to us and tells us these are things that you really need to work on. Now, one might say, well, how could it help really to know that the supplication of a righteous man availeth much? That is what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to look at the common sense approach. How will that statement help me in everyday life? Knowing what James says, how will that help me to live in my life tomorrow? Now, really, as we began to look at this, I think that all of us would agree that if our Lord were to come back right now and talk to us here at Kirkland and tell us our good points and tell us our bad points, that probably one of the bad points would be, you do not pray as fervently as you ought to pray. Now, you think about yourself, and you stop to think, if the Lord were standing right here now and he made that statement, would you stand up and correct him? Would you stand up and say, "Lord, I know that that is probably true among a lot of people, but it is not with me. Because I have absolute, total confidence in prayer. I never waver when it comes to prayer. I always pray on a daily basis. I pray fervently, and I have absolute confidence that my God not only hears me, but that my God does answer my prayer." No, Lord, that is not one of my weaknesses. Would there be anyone in this generation who would dare stand up and make such a statement as that? I am afraid that we are not a praying generation as we ought to be. And so today, let us study that statement and let us ask it from this viewpoint. How will that statement help me live tomorrow? How will it help me live next Friday night? Just to know this statement right here and remember it, the supplication of a righteous man availeth much in its working. All right, first of all, let us analyze the statement very, very briefly and see what it actually says. First of all, it says the supplication. Now, the word supplication literally means a begging or imploring of God for what one desires. That is that when we beg of God, when we implore of God, when we beseech God, then we are doing what this actually says. Now, also we read in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6, where Paul tells us the same thing. He said, "In everything, by prayer and," there's our word, "supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God." So what Paul says is that in everything we do this. He didn't leave out anything. Anything that is worth our time and our effort is worth our going to God in prayer for. Now then, as we're looking then, it is a prayer. Here James is talking about not a prayer of thanksgiving, not a prayer of some other nature, but a prayer in which we are going to God and we are begging God and imploring God for something that we desire. Now the next statement says, the supplication of a righteous man. So here is a qualification. The supplication of an evil man will not accomplish anything. But it says the supplication of a righteous man. This is one, an individual who is doing that which is right. That really is the definition of a righteous man. If you're doing that which is right, then you're righteous. Listen to how John puts it in 1 John chapter 2, verse 29. He said, "If ye know that he is righteous, ye know that everyone also that doeth righteousness is begotten of him." Again, he says in 1 John 3, 7, "My little children, let no man lead you astray. He that doeth righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous." So then John tells us that we can be righteous as God is righteous. He said that really is not a shocking statement, because if God is our Father, and if God is a righteous God, and if we know that God is a righteous God, then what would we expect ourselves to be? Would we also not expect ourselves to be righteous? Then he says, you are righteous if you do that which is right, if you actually practice righteousness. So then we're talking about people, the opposite of evil. We're talking about people that are doing that which is right before God. Now the next word is much. Now this is going to avail much. Now what does that word mean? Well, that is really a relative term. When you say that, really it means the opposite of little. Now I can illustrate it in this way. Much water to an elephant is a different proportion than much water to an ant. And so you'd say, well, yeah, I understand that. If an ant has to swim through much water, it might be a cup of water. But if an elephant goes through much water, certainly a cup would not be much. Well, then how do you determine that which is much? How do you determine if it's much water, if you're talking about an ant, but then how do you determine what much water is to an elephant? Well, much means a superabundance. It means more than that which is sufficient, more than that which is needful. So now what does this say? This is going to tell me that my prayer as a righteous man is going to accomplish much more than what I really need in my prayer. It's going to be a great deal. Like the next word is worketh. And that is, it says, that the supplication of a righteous man availeth much in its working. Now, what does working really mean? It is the word that comes from energy. That our prayer, the prayer of a righteous man, contains a great deal of energy. And that energy is expended, that it's actually accomplishing something during the time that we are praying. That is what James right here is saying. Look at it in Luke chapter 11, verses 5 through 8. There we find what's called the persistent friend. He said, what man is there who has a friend that if at the midnight hour you have company that comes and visits you? So you go over to the friend's house and you knock on his door and you say, friend, I have company who just came in and I don't have any bread. Would you lend me some bread? Now, he said, if the friend yells out and says, go away, everybody's in bed and I don't want to wake up my household. Now, keep in mind, at that time, they would have all been sleeping in one room. They would have been lying just next to next, one body after another. If you get up, you'd have to step over the bodies of the sleeping children, go in and get some bread. You would disturb your household. Now, he said, I don't want to do that. Now, he said, even if your friendship is not enough, said, if you continue to ask him, he said, oh, please, please, and you won't go away, he said, then he will get up and give you some bread. Now, what he's showing is that prayer or a beseeching actually has an effect. Another one is what is called the importune widow in Luke chapter 18, verse 1 through 8. And there's the widow that goes to a judge. The judge won't listen to her. But she goes back, and she goes back, and she goes back, and finally the judge says, I'll listen to her because she comes back. All right, her beseeching actually had an effect. Now, what God is trying to say right here is this, that if your beseeching has an effect upon a human being who either knows you or doesn't know you, but if it has an effect upon a human being who is selfish like your friend, or who is a godless individual like a judge, now if you're beseeching those kind of people actually has an effect, think what an effect your beseeching would have upon a God who wants to answer your prayer. See, that's the idea that is presented there, and that's the idea that James is presenting, that it worketh much, it availeth much in its working. while you are praying. Now think about that. Do you really consider that something is actually going on in heaven during the time that you're on your knees in prayer? Or do you think that it's kind of like going down to the license bureau and they stamp this and this and they say, okay, give us 6 weeks or 8 weeks and we'll send you this, you see. Now, we'll get around to it whenever we get around to it. That's what we are used to living with. But this says it actually works and has an effect while you're really doing it. Listen to the prayer of Daniel. In Daniel chapter 1, verse 21, and I want to emphasize only two things in this prayer. Now, notice this. Daniel has offered a prayer, and then Daniel describes what happened after the prayer. Now, here's what Daniel said. He said, yea. Now, listen. He said, while I was speaking in prayer, during the time of which I was on my knees in prayer, something happened. What happened, Daniel? It said, the man Gabriel, this is an angel now, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, touched me about the time of the evening oblation. That is about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And he instructed me and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I am come to give thee wisdom and understanding. Now listen again. At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment went forth. Daniel, when you got on your knees, at the very beginning of your prayer, God looked over at me, Gabriel, and said, Gabriel, go fast and do this to Daniel. Now, Daniel's prayer availed much in its working. At the very precise moment that he was praying, energy, effort, was expended from the divine throne. Now, that's what that says. We've analyzed the verse very briefly today. But that's not the point of the lesson. The point of the lesson is, all right, now after I have learned this, after I have learned that as I go to God, beseeching God and begging God, if I am a righteous man, that my prayer will have a tremendous effect. It will have a great amount of energy. But how does that help me at 9 o'clock in the morning? How does that help me 7 days a week to know that? That's the purpose of our sermon today. How will it help? I stop to think, if one really understands that, and if one really believes that, one really puts their confidence in that, think of what that will do to you in your everyday life. It, first of all, gives us absolute assurance that God hears and that God cares. Now that's the first thing to let us know. It let us know that God actually hears our prayer and God cares about our prayer. Now, first of all, James says that he did. Peter concurs. And in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7, Peter says, casting all your cares upon him, because he careth for you. Now think about that. Here we have James saying that it will avail much. And we say, then that gives me the assurance that God does care and God does hear. And Peter says that is exactly right. He said, I want you to cast all your cares upon him because he cares for you. Now you know that is one of the basic needs of man. To know that somebody cares. How many times have people had broken hearts over various things? And nobody has extended any sympathy to them. And they have had to go through and bear it all themselves. And when it's over, they said, the thing that hurt is, nobody cared. Now, do you stop to realize that that is the reason we send sympathy cards? Sympathy cards doesn't do one thing to anybody except say, I care. I care enough that I went to the store and I picked out a card and I sent you the card. Done nothing to that. All you got to do is just run to the store, just pick out a card, run over to the day we can have it broken down in sections. Run over there if it's a birthday, if it's a death, if it's a wedding, whatever it is, and pick out one real fast, run back over. But what that says is, I care. even in a time of when there's nothing I can do, I can let you know I care. And every time that you have ever received a card from anybody, that's what it said to you, and it made you feel just a little bit better. Now, it's one of our basic needs of man. Do people care? We want to know. But now then, let's turn to heaven. Really, in every problem I have, every heartache I have, does God care? Yeah. That's what we're taught. God does care. But what about those little insignificant things? Let me ask you something as a parent. Let me ask you that when your child comes home from school and there's some little insignificant thing, somebody said some ugly thing about the child. A little friend said, "Oh, you bald, and your teeth are crooked. You got a scab on your nose. Oh, you didn't make 100 on spelling. Oh, you're dumb." And so your child comes home crying. Do you care? Suppose I walk in and I say, look, Mom and Dad, this is nothing. I mean, every kid has to go through that. Everybody. All the kids make fun of everybody. Just wait until the kid grows up and has some big problems. Does that solve your problem? Do you care? Yeah. Yeah, you care when your kids are little and when they come home and another kid has said something ugly to them and they're brokenhearted. Yes, you care. And then later on when they get older and they go out and they lose their money or a date doesn't show up or they don't get asked out and they're brokenhearted, yes, you care. And then when they get married and they don't have the money to do this or that, yes, you care. And you can look back and when they were in kindergarten, that little scab on the nose is insignificant now, isn't it? But as a parent, yes, you care. And what I'm trying to say is this. It doesn't make any difference how big or little the problem is you have. I'm telling you that just like you care when your child is hurt, the Bible says God cares. So whatever problem that you have, regardless of how insignificant it is, if your heart is broken, you can go to a loving God and you can know absolutely sure God hears your prayer and God does care. Yes. 5 or 10 years from now, you might have matured enough to where you look back and you would be ashamed that you were even upset because of the problem you have now. But God cares. And then God will understand at that period of time. And so, yeah, the first thing is it gives us assurance God does hear and God does care. Secondly, that statement gives us the assurance that God will answer our prayers. There's absolutely no doubt about it. He will answer our prayers. Now, you stop to think, really, that as we try to show sympathy to people, there are a lot of times, you know, when we go to somebody, we say, "Now, if there's anything I can do, just let me know." And then walk away. And the person can tell, you know, that person doesn't really want you to call them up and say, "Hey, can you do this or that?" It really doesn't do much good if you go in and here's a person that has a lot of problems and a lot of things that you could do, and you say, "Well, if there's anything I can do, let me know," and then leave. We know that this is common among human beings, all of us. And that is that we really don't want to spend the energy to help under that circumstance. Now, is that the way that God is? There's very little comfort in approaching somebody that we really do not expect to get an answer from them. We don't expect to get a sympathetic ear. We have no compassion at all or no comfort there. Now listen to John. Listen to what John says about God. He said in 1 John chapter 5, verse 14, "And this is the boldness which we have toward Him." Now we have a lot of boldness in going to God. This is like a little child. How many times have you, as a little child, or somebody said, "Why don't you run up to so-and-so and ask him?" And you say, "Oh, no, I wouldn't go up there." But the child of that parent runs up and says, "Daddy, could I do this?" And they have a lot of boldness. They have a whole lot of it. Why do they have boldness? Why is it that when I'm in my office that there might be a little girl out there that wants to come in and she'll knock very gently on the door, or when she comes in, a little 5 or 6 years old, she'll look around and walk in and just kind of look around and she doesn't run over. But my grandchildren, they open up the door and come in, "Hi, Grandpa," and come over there and just make themselves at home. What's the difference? One is very bold. The other is timid. What's the difference? Relationship. Relationship. My grandchildren know how they will be accepted. That other little girl doesn't. Oh, if that other little girl really knew me, she would know that I'd pick her up, put her on my lap, I'd show her around. If she really knew me, but if she doesn't know me, she's going to approach me in a very timid way. But my grandkids will run in because they know what their granddad thinks of them. They know, and it gives them boldness to be able to approach me and ask of me whatever they want. Now, that's what John says. John says, "And this is the boldness which we have toward him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. And if we know that he heareth us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petition which we have asked of him." Think of that. Just like my grandkids. Come in and say, "Grandpa, can we go out and get a strawberry sundae?" Now, they know I'm not going to get up and slap them. Now, I might say, "No. No, we're going to go get a hamburger. And then if you're still hungry, we'll get a strawberry sundae." It doesn't devastate them. It doesn't ruin their life. They know that I'm going to give them what is the very best for them. Recently, I brought home a box of Hershey bars, which is not the best thing for kids. And I put them in my drawer and kind of have a little game. And every once in a while, I'll give them a Hershey bar. And what are they doing? They're doing what every other kid. They're pushing it. See, they ask for it, and then yeah, you can have one today. In a little while, they come back. Could we have another one today? Now, if I give them another one today, it would be free today, wouldn't it? Now, even though me being a perfect grandpa, I do give in. Now, there have been times I get, "Yeah, you can have another one." And do you know, even little kids like that will look at me and they'll say, "Grandpa, are you sure?" Mom wouldn't like it if she were here. You know, in other words, are you sure this is the best for me? Now, this is all I'm getting at. If a little child like that knows they can go to Grandpa and do that, don't we know we can go to God, and don't we know that God will give us what is the best for us? See, that's it. Now, as we do this, we know he'll answer. We've already had an example of Daniel. What did he do? When Daniel began to pray, God answered him. Hezekiah, in 2 Kings chapter 20, there Hezekiah was about to die. And Isaiah told him, he said, "You are going to die." Hezekiah turned his face to the wall, he cried, and he prayed to God. And then it says, "Thus saith Jehovah, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears, behold, I will heal thee." There's another example. God will answer our prayers. Cornelius, in chapter 10, verse 4, it said, an angel came and said unto him, "Thy prayers and thine alms are gone up for a memorial before God." We have examples given to us that God will hear and that God will answer. That's what James is telling us. He's telling us the supplication of a righteous man availeth much. It actually does work. Now, another thing. It gives us the assurance that God can and will do anything that's necessary to answer us. A lot of times that's kind of something we don't believe in. Or we might pray to God if the illness is rather insignificant, but if the illness is very, very intensified, maybe it's too far gone and God will not answer if you're really sick. No, this right here says that the supplication of a righteous man availeth much. What's much water to an elephant? More than he needs. What's much water to an ant? More than he needs. What's much effectiveness to my prayer? More than a need. Oh, you mean that even if there's something out there that it boggles my mind and I can't handle it, it's so great that nobody else can handle it, you mean that I can go to God and expect enough power that's even more than I need? That's what James says. See, that's the very point that he's making there. And he gives us an illustration of Elijah. That's the reason the next verse is in there. He said, now Elijah was a man of like passion with us. Here is where he brings out the point that Elijah was a man of like passion with us. Now where it says of like passion with us, that means of the same feelings that we have. Here's what we do with Elijah. If you give an illustration of Elijah, all of us would say, yes, but Elijah was different. Elijah was an Old Testament character that was devoted to God, and he prayed to God, and God answered Elijah. You can't put me in the same category of Elijah. Well, James did. See, this is the point. James says Elijah was a man of like passion with us. There was no difference between Elijah and me. That's what James says. See? And so James says, now don't set Elijah aside and say that he was a special character that had access to the prayers of God more than what we had. Then he goes ahead and he said, now he prayed fervently that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. Now we learned that it didn't do that there for 3 years and 6 months. Jesus said it didn't in Luke chapter 4, verse 25. And here again we find that James says, for 3 years and 6 months. What had happened is that the nation of Israel had really gone corrupt. And the king was corrupt. And so Elijah goes to God and asks him for this particular problem. That is to try to bring them to their senses. And God stopped the rains for 3 years and 6 months. And then he said, and he prayed again, and the heavens gave forth rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. And so after that, then he prayed again. Now that is really something. When you go back and you begin to read about that, the story of Elijah, that is a great thing. One might say, well, that was a miracle though, Lowell. And you don't believe that God is going to operate miracles today. Well, let me ask you, was that a miracle? What was that a miracle? Now, a miracle is that which man can observe that goes against nature. See, that's what it is. I don't know how God operates in heaven. I don't know everything that God does. But I know that God can do two things. I know that God can cause things to happen that is directly contradictory or opposite to the laws that God has set forth to operate this world. So he does that. When Jesus walked on water, that set aside God's laws of an object that's heavier than water not sinking in. The law of specific gravity. If you're heavy in the water, you're going to sink down into the water. But Jesus didn't. That law was just set aside. That's a miracle. But now, in this case, what happened? The thing that happened was, and it's revealed back to us in 1 Kings chapter 17 and 18, here, Elijah, when he got ready for it to rain, he goes up and he tells the king, he said, now the sound of an abundance of rain, you know, I can already hear it. Isn't that something? I can hear a lot of rain when it hadn't rained for 3 years and 6 months. And then he told him, he said, now it's getting ready to rain. Elijah went out and took his servant out with him. He bowed down and he prayed to God that God would cause it to rain. And then he asked his servant, he said, would you run over and look over toward the sea at the west to see if God's answered yet, and a cloud's coming in. So he goes over and he looks and he said, no, God hadn't caused the cloud to come in. The sky still just clears the veil like it has been for 3 years and 6 months. And so he got down and he prayed again. And he did that 7 times. And the 7th time, the servant came back and said, way over there, I can see a cloud about the size of a man's hand. And Elijah got up and said, go tell Ahab to get down off of that mountain where he is before the rains stop him, because the floods are coming. And it said that the cloud then began to grow and grow, and it turned black, and the flood started coming, and water soaked the land. Now I want to ask you a question. How did that rain happen? Well, that rain dropped out of a black sky up above them. A thunderstorm. Is that a miracle? No, you say, I've seen that happen. Where'd it come from? It came from out over the sea. Is that a miracle? Well, where do all of our rains come from? From out over the sea. It came from a cloud. See, as people looked at it, They didn't see anything different except now the floods are coming. That is what James is saying. God can so operate that you need to use that as an illustration that He can do anything to answer our prayers. Now the next thing that we can learn from this is the supplication of a righteous man availeth much, is the assurance that he will, that what he gives us will always be the best for us, not necessarily what we want. Now that's a big one. That's a big one for your kids to understand. As you open up, as they open up some Christmas presents, you're probably going to see some little lips turned down. You know, they've asked for the gold bottle or this or that or something, and you get them something else, and their little lips are troubled. That's not what I wanted, you see, or something of this nature. And we look at it and we teach them, don't be selfish. Don't be rude. Be appreciative. Like the rest of us adults here at Kirkland. Why, when we go to God and we ask God to give us something, and God gives us something different than what we ask, we immediately say, oh, I'm so appreciative, and we go back and thank God, don't we? Or do we say, well, I knew that God wouldn't do it. I knew that, you know, God doesn't answer prayer. He doesn't give me what I want. Now, God never has said, I'll give you what you want. God says, I will listen to your prayers, and I will answer your request, and I will give you what you need. That's what he's after. Now, you stop to think. When Elijah prayed that God would stop the rains and cause Israel to have all this problem, do you realize the suffering Elijah had to go through? He also got thirsty. He had to go down and live down by the creek in order to be fed by some ravens to get through that. That really wasn't fun. Think about Habakkuk. Remember Habakkuk when he prayed to God and he said, oh Lord, why is it you're letting Israel be so wicked and you're not doing anything? And God responded and said, I am working a work in your day right now that if I tell you what it is, you wouldn't believe it. And then God told him. He said, I am preparing a nation that is so mean and vicious and wicked that they're going to come over and just mutilate Israel. And he just totally shocked Habakkuk. And Habakkuk said, but Lord, that's not what I want. See, Lord, we're not that mean, and that country is meaner than what we are, and that doesn't seem fair. And then God had the conversation. That's what the book of Habakkuk is about. And God telling him, here's what's going to happen. And it ended up that Habakkuk says that I just wait and shudder and shake. But God answered his prayer. But in answering his prayer, Habakkuk had to suffer those various things. David prayed to God. He prayed about that little baby. And the little baby died. What did David do? Did he get up and throw a temper tantrum? No. No, he knew that it was very best. He got up and he truly thanked his God. Now, in Matthew chapter 7, verse 7 and 8, we have a promise of Jesus Christ that ask and you'll receive it. Seek it and you're going to find it. Knock and it will be opened unto you. Here he says, these things actually will happen to you. And then, down in verse 8, he goes ahead or verse 9, he goes ahead and he says this. Or what man is there of you who, if his son ask him for a loaf, that's a loaf of bread, will give him a stone? Or if he ask for a fish, will give him a serpent? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your Father who is in heaven give good things to them that ask him? So here we have the promise. And that is that look at a father. If a son ask a father for something to eat, a loaf of bread, will he give him a rock? If he ask him for something, a fish, will he give him a snake? No. Well, if we who are here an evil people, if we understand how to give good gifts, how much more will God give us the good things that in our life? Illustration of this, I just heard last week. I don't know whether Dave Bray will mind if I tell it or not, but about 4 or 5 months ago, Dave had been working real hard and he was trying to get a promotion. And they interviewed everybody and they passed him over and they didn't give him promotion. They gave a newer guy and a guy that had been pulling some hanky-panky down there and elevated him and left Dave right down there. It devastated him. It devastated both of them. They were just really, really devastated. And so Dave said, well, I'll just transfer over to the other side of the company. It's divided in two parts. Our details doesn't make any difference. But so he transferred over and got over there and still out doing the same old stuff right there and just devastated. Then all of a sudden he gets a raise, and then all of a sudden he gets better days off. And then last week the company came in and fired every person in that department, in the other department. Had God answered Dave's prayer and God had given Dave that promotion today, he would have been down on the breadline. Today he would have been without a job. Now, what I'm getting at is this. When you pray to God, not all the time God gives you exactly what you want. God does give you what is the best for you. See, that's what he gives us. Now, if we can really believe what James says, then we can know that as we pray, we're going to get what God would want us to have, not necessarily what we would like to have. And then the next thing is that it's never too late to pray. The prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And you say, yeah, but I have so many problems, it's already too late. No, it's never too late. It's never too late, because the power of prayer is availeth much, much more strength than what you need. And that is, even if God is in the process of doing one thing, do you realize that a prayer can cause God to change his mind and have him to do another thing? Isn't that amazing? But we have examples of where that actually took place. It took place with Hezekiah. Hezekiah was in the process of dying. God had already sent a message and told him, you're going to die. Hezekiah prays, and he prays fervently, and then God changed his mind and sent a message back and says, I'm not going to take your life right now. I will go ahead and extend your life. You remember that Moses, in Exodus chapter 32, verse 9, there God was going to destroy all the children of Israel because of their wickedness. Moses goes to God and pleads with God, and God said, well, all right, since you've done that, I will repent, meaning change my mind. I'll change my mind, and I'll not do that. Is there power in prayer? If we believe the Bible, you see, we can see that tremendous power that there is in prayer. Now, the last thing that it will help us, it'll help us in having all of that confidence, but it all boils down to this, that if we understand all of these things that it actually assures us of, then it will cause me to be a praying man as God desires and as God commands. It'll change my life. It'll cause me to be a man that's obedient to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17, where Paul says, pray without ceasing. Live a life of prayer in everything you do. It will cause me to be the kind of man that God would have me to be, as Paul commands in Philippians 4:6. Listen to this. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let me ask you, are you happy? Do you rejoice in the Lord? Or should I say, did you rejoice before you got in some kind of a problem? Oh yeah, I'm happy when I don't have a problem. But what Paul says here is, rejoice in the Lord always. It doesn't make any difference. Again, I say, rejoice. Let your forbearance be made known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. In nothing be anxious. Don't let any cares get you down. Anxious means overly concerned. Be overly concerned to where you're going to start becoming neurotic and start breaking down. Don't do that. But in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God, and the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. Can I be that kind of man? Can I be the kind of man that rejoices? And can I be the kind of man that has peace with God and has a peace that absolutely surpasses my understanding, let alone being able to explain it? That says you can. And how do I accomplish it? It says, by being anxious in nothing, but in everything, going to God in prayer and in supplication. And shouldn't we close the lesson about the way that we began the lesson? Where the Apostle Peter says, casting all your cares upon him, for he careth for you. Yes, if we really believe that the prayer or the supplication of a righteous man availeth much, it'll affect me today and tomorrow and Thursday and Saturday, day and night, because I have a certain attitude toward my God. should there be one in our audience today that understands that your life is not in harmony with God's will, you need to be washed in His blood. Would you let it be known while we stand, while we sing the first stanza?